Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we create an environment for founders to thrive through education, inspiration, and a supportive community. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host today. Our special guest today is Kelsey Chase, corporate lawyer turned entrepreneur and co-founder of Omni, a data-focused startup helping you make sense of all your investment data in an easy-to-understand software. Welcome to the show today, Kelsey.
Yeah, Nathan, awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. As we know, all startups need to create a easy to understand corporate structure. So let's dive into basically a little bit of a corporate structure that you're seeing that founders are failing to start in.
Yeah, so I'll tie this in a little bit to my background because it's super relevant. Speaking with a group of entrepreneurs and where I started my career was as a corporate attorney with a large technology law firm, and that law firm was Wilson Sonsini. And so Wilson Sonsini, for especially entrepreneurs, investors, folks that have been in the technology sector, they're a really active law firm, but it was a very cool experience for me because fresh out of law school, I'm sort of launching and joining a firm that represents a lot of technology companies at all stages of growth and development, from a couple of people in a garage with an idea to pre-IPO, post-IPO businesses. So for a brand new attorney, I'm immediately sort of thrown into that world. Getting access to early stage entrepreneurs and then, you know, C-level management at public companies and getting to sort of play in the startup sandbox at different stages of development. So for me, as I stayed in that world, I had the great pleasure of working with, as their outside attorney, working with well over, you know, hundred companies and a multitude of different types of investors that were investing into these companies, which include established venture firms, family offices, high net worth individuals, angel investors, and other types of institutional investment firms and asset management firms. And so my sort of unique experience that's very applicable to my business and what we're doing is that I've just, you know, seen as an attorney, I've worked with lots of entrepreneurs and have seen them grow their businesses, have seen how they structure capital raises and capital growth in the business, and have had the pleasure of seeing that through a variety of different stages of growth. So that's kind of my unique experience. Is I've worked as an attorney, really on as counsel to entrepreneurs as they're building their business and raising capital. And then I've also had the pleasure of working with investors who are investing into those companies. So have had the benefit of just really being able to see all sides of the table, if you will, like, and really got a sense as an attorney, what entrepreneurs were focused on, what their goals were when they were raising capital, and then had the benefit of seeing how investors thought about investing into companies. What were their goals and strategies? What risks were they concerned about when they're putting an investment together for a particular company? So that, you know, bringing that in to Omni when we started it was a pretty interesting transition going from sort of the lawyer that's really, I think, in a lot of ways on the sidelines. You're close to the entrepreneurs and investors, they're your clients, but you're not really the principals driving the decisions and driving the goals. So to transition to the founder role where this is really mine and Tony's business, and now we're thinking about these same considerations that we would advise on as attorneys, but we're now sort of in the hot seat and have all of our sweat equity in the business. And so it was a cool transition because, of course, I could leverage a lot of that knowledge, but also, you know, tons of learnings too. Tony and I had never started a technology company before. And so in a lot of ways, we were brand new technology entrepreneurs and have lots of learnings over the, you know, last 5 years or so that we've been building the business.
Man, that's good. Talk to us a little bit about where you first began and what inspired you to actually take the plunge into entrepreneurship, but also just take us back a little bit as to, you know, like I said, what's inspired you and how you're growing as the person you are today.
So yeah, for me, I did my undergraduate, studied political science and business, and I looked at the law degree. My dad's an attorney, has a solo practice, so I sort of grew up around lawyers, and I very much saw the value in a law degree, and honestly had, I don't think I had clear intentions to practice law. Was very interested in, you know, some business areas and in particular real estate. So I actually went to law school, and I think in particular for real estate, the value of a law degree was really compelling. So I really viewed law school as this would be sort of a great degree, a great trade, and great academics to add on to a, you know, business career in real estate. But it was going through law school and getting exposed to the corporate transactional world through courses that got really interested in how corporate deal making happens, you know, beyond just real estate, but looking at, you know, private company financings, mergers and acquisitions, capital markets. So my interest sort of got peaked in law school and then just found my way very fortunately into this opportunity with Wilson. And so I sort of look back on the decision to go to law school is really to bolster my education and skills to be leveraged in a career in real estate, but got exposed to the corporate world and found a nice opportunity with an amazing law firm and sort of went down that path without really necessarily planning to do it. Just kind of fell in love with corporate transactions and deal making and the pace that large law firms can offer you as a young attorney. I think it's just really exciting. You're sort of, again, thrown into these high stakes deals. You get lots of exposure. There's lots of volume. And part of the downside of working at a large law firm, and I think anyone from large scale professional services, be it finance, accounting, law, it is a high pace profession, and lots of hours. It can be very demanding. And so there are aspects of law, I think, that started to just, you know, have me look at my career and where I wanted to take it, look at what I really enjoyed doing. And did I see myself sort of continuing down the path as an attorney? And similar to investment banking or finance, you're sort of ultimately working towards some sort of a partnership level achievement. And I looked at that and thought, I had other aspirations. I was very entrepreneurial. And while I also worked at a law firm called DLA Piper, which is one of the largest law firms in the world. You know, while I got to work very closely with entrepreneurs, you are in that service provider role. And so I was always interested in taking the learnings that I had seen as an attorney and building a business out of that. And so let me tie in my co-founder, Tony, who is also a corporate lawyer. And he and I met at Wilson Sonsini probably 9-10 years ago on a transaction we were staffed on together. And then just really built a friendship from that point forward. He had left Wilson and we'd sort of taken different turns in our career, but had stayed in very close touch after we had stopped working together formally at the law firm. And so Tony and I for years had always been entrepreneurial. You know, we've been so excited about what we had seen as lawyers and knew that there were opportunities to bring data, technology, more efficiency to that corporate transactional world. So over the years, I think we constantly talked about business ideas, business models that could be applied to the space, and ultimately got pretty excited about the early, you know, foundation of what would become Omni. And so it started with Tony and I just drawing on our experience, seeing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars transacted and realizing there were better ways to do things. There was more data we could bring into that world. And we sort of what caused me to take the plunge was I just hit this point in my legal career and had I think the right risk profile too, had just gotten married, did not have kids at the time. And it was sort of the right time to like leave the golden handcuffs and go take a big risk. bootstrap a business and go for it. And that was, you know, for me, it was a function of timing and incredible support from my wife to leave this great career in law to go pursue a startup. And yeah, so that was sort of the motivation, was just kind of looking at, this is the right time to do it. And we went for it.
Tell us about the problems. As entrepreneurs, we're always trying to solve problems. So let's just talk about one problem that stood out to you that you were like, you know what? I'm the guy in partnership with your partner, and we're going to make this happen. We're going to solve this. Do you think you guys have done a good job of that? But first, just kind of let us know about that.
Yeah, it stems from, I think, a very basic frustration that I had as a lawyer. And that is, in Omni Sandbox, we play in the private transactional world, so the private capital markets. And for me, one of the defining features of private capital markets as opposed to public equities and public markets is that private dealmaking is defined by complex corporate transactions. That's why companies need to hire a law firm like Wilson Sonsini, investors work with a law firm like DLA Piper. You need very sophisticated, high-powered law firms to put these transactions together, these contracts together. And so as an attorney, being really in the middle of those transactions, driving a deal from, you know, from inception all the way through closing and post-closing, you really get to see how the sausage is made at the sort of contract and transactional level. And it's through that process, through thousands and thousands of hours that I spent in those deals, that I think myself and Tony really saw lots of opportunity to do things better. We thought there were aspects of private deal making that were ripe for some disruption and efficiencies and innovation. And then moreover, I think the problem statement that Omni is going after is the private capital markets are really an incredibly immature market from a data perspective. Mm. These markets are very inefficient with information sharing and transparency. And there's lots of opportunity for data to come into these markets and model some things that the public markets do very well in terms of pricing efficiency, information efficiency. But I think private markets, for a lot of reasons, have other opportunities around data that will make it really interesting and that get us really excited to build the company and pursue the vision that we're pursuing at Omni.
Take us through a customer journey of somebody who's interested or is wanting or is leveraging your platform in a way that they could find it useful.
Sure. So what we do at our core is analyze private capital transaction documents. And our core customer segment today are venture and growth equity investors and other types of investors. But essentially, the profile of a customer for us that we typically work very well with is someone that has invested directly into a private high growth company that's pursuing, you know, outside capital. So in common sort of terms, these are typically investors that are investing into high growth tech companies. And that can be traditional technology, life science. And these are your typical venture firms that you would see in Silicon Valley and now sort of course, all over the country. But those are our target customers who have direct investments into private companies. And what we do for them is we go into their transaction documents. And so take one of our investors in Utah, Pelion. When they invested into Omni Series B, they are typically investing in a slew of documents that might net out to something like 600 pages of legalese and legal contracts that come together. How most venture firms operate, and this goes back to my learnings as a lawyer, but once that deal closes, those 600 pages are sort of fully agreed to, they're buttoned up. Once the deal closes, no one around the table does anything with that information. That includes the investors, the company, the lawyers, the auditors, the fund admins, everyone around the table, the deal closes, nothing happens. So the core thesis for Tony and I was, hey, there's a lot of resources that get poured into the negotiating those docs. We think just at a core level, there's value in that data. How do we unlock it? How do we study it, analyze it, make it actionable and useful for stakeholders in the ecosystem? So the core customer journey is really unlocking data that lives inside of these agreements to power a lot of functions within a typical venture firm. And so at this point, our platform, to put it in more concrete terms, supports a variety of functions from, you know, traditional back office workflows and roles like a finance and accounting team, a legal team, and then also supporting functions and roles in the quote front office. So these are the, this is the investment staff that's really driving deal pipeline, making investments, raising capital. And how the data out of these agreements that Omni analyzes can be leveraged in those different roles is quite varied. So for example, most venture firms have to, especially institutional venture firms that have institutional limited partners in their fund, they are required to value their assets on some regular cadence, be it quarterly, semi-annual, or annually. And to do that for a private company security requires a very deep understanding of the asset. This is not like buying a share of Google. When you buy a share in a private company, you have to go back to the transaction documents to understand exactly what you bought. The defining feature of private securities are they come attached with lots of legal, economic, financial rights and terms. And so to sort of get at that, just even that core workflow of valuing the security, you've got to understand what is the security that I hold? Where does it sit in a liquidation waterfall? Are there senior preferences that sit ahead of me? So while the company may exit someday, if it doesn't clear liquidation preferences in a particular sequence, certain investors may get their money out of the company before I ever do, or maybe I never get money out of the company. And so understanding just the legal structure of a venture capital liquidation preference is key to running a valuation, for example. And Omni helps, you know, that is a subset of data that we analyze and structure out of these documents that can power a valuations workflow.
Yeah, I've seen valuations in the M&A markets and it's, you know, it's complex, right? And do you know, and do you have a system of really, if somebody out there is listening to this and they're looking to actually purchase a business, are there various things that you would suggest or advise to them to look for valuation in various companies they're looking to acquire?
Yeah, there's a whole, there's lots of different approaches and methodologies to valuations. And when I look at our client base, they're, part of this comes down to a function of resourcing. You know, while you might look at a $25 million venture fund, for example, and I think that's a healthy amount of capital to be sitting inside of a fund to be deploying, when you look at the actual resources that a $25 million fund has in terms of management fees and other fees that they could put towards operating the fund, this is not a big business really in terms of expense items that they can incur. So they can't necessarily spend a lot of money on sophisticated technology, expensive service providers. And so some of that work may have to be done entirely in-house, for example. And that's where I'd say a lot of firms are getting a lot of scale and leverage is from platforms and service providers. They're sort of stepping in and helping to bridge the gap. On the other end of the spectrum, very large multi-billion dollar venture and private equity funds have entire teams of people that could be focused, for example, just on valuations. And they have budget and resources to invest in technology and platforms to do that. So I think the methodologies are going to be all over the map. But as we're doing this podcast in September of 2022, we're at this very, very interesting change in the market, especially for the technology sector. Leading up to today, public technology companies have had a considerable decline in value over the past 6 months. We're studying private company data, we're starting to see those ripple effects in private companies and their valuations. And this is probably one of the hottest topic for venture funds right now is how are they thinking about valuing their private portfolio when public markets have sort of taken such a big hit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I'm sure we could probably open up a large conversation in regards to what that is and how it goes. But, being able to reach out to the right people and have resources around that could help them. Do you have any resources that just come to mind? Maybe a website or something that you could say, hey, check out this website. I've used it before for evaluation, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. So for valuations, I think for the investors listening in, I would definitely encourage you to speak with your advisors and service providers like law firms and audit firms. They're going to have great places for you to get advice around valuations. There are other, there are technology platforms that can facilitate that. But I would maybe kind of turn this back to the entrepreneur's lens. So if you're a founder, this is just a good thing to keep in mind. And if you're a founder, and by the way, not all startups require or have to have a strategy to go raise outside capital from VC firms, but I'll sort of limit like my advice to those founders that are seeking to raise outside capital and grow their business with venture capital. But it's good to note and understand the profile and the goals of your investor base. So if you've raised venture capital from an institutional firm that has limited partners that might be endowments, pension funds, family offices, high net worth individuals, it's good to remember that your venture investors are accountable to an even sort of broader group of investors in their fund. And so when an investor is attempting to value the shares that they have in your company, they're really doing it with, you know, the intent of being accountable and a fiduciary to lots of other investors in that fund. So I think that's just a good lens for founders to have is keep in mind that your investors, while they provide a lot of capital and value to your business, they're also running a business and they have investors that they're accountable to. And so things that they need to report and collect from you as a founder are really critical to the responsibilities that they have managing other investors' capital.
Man, this is exciting. So what is it that excites you about just coming into work every day with the company that you built?
I have to say the team. You know, I'm really fortunate that we've been in just a really great spot to assemble, I think, a world-class team tackling a pretty exciting and complex problem. And that, you know, the company's about 140, 150 people. Most of them do reside in Salt Lake, but we've placed a lot of emphasis and focus around building out a high quality team. And I think that's what's exciting is I get to wake up. The business is pursuing an awesome problem. It's really, really, you know, intellectually intriguing and complex. And we've got awesome things that the business is doing, but to do that with cool people and people that I enjoy working with is the best part about it.
Tell us more about the maturation of the business. And as a founder, you go through various stages of leadership. You go through various stages of culture creation. And as a co-founder, you have to set the mission and vision pretty clear, but also be understanding that things will change in specific time, right? So share with us a little bit about how that maturation has been and how you've been able to navigate.
Yeah, it's a great question. And for our particular business, we definitely require and attract a lot of talent from of course, building a data platform. We have a very large technology team. But I think also on this point, it would be good to focus on the individuals that we recruit from professional services, financial services. So these are folks that have a background, you know, in some ways similar to mine. They've worked at a large bank or a large law firm, a very corporate environment. To bring those incredibly talented people and throw them into a startup environment is a huge, huge culture shock. It's like getting the ice bucket challenge, if that's still a thing, but it's a big culture shock to go from a corporate environment to the startup world. And I think the mental model I've offered before to folks is in the corporate environment, it's very structured. You have resources and you probably have a checklist that you can keep somewhat under control and, you know, punch through day in and day out. When you come to a startup, your checklist is unlimited. There are an unlimited number of tasks, priorities, things that you could be accomplishing on a given day. And so the key skill that is extremely important for founders, for anyone joining a high growth company at any stage, is to focus on prioritization. And that becomes the skill, the muscle to learn, is your list is going to be infinite. You're going to unroll the scroll and it's going to like roll all the way down the street in terms of things that you could be accomplishing in a given time. And so the skill that I think is really key to develop is around prioritization. What are the most important things you could be doing at any given time for the company? And, you know, the nice thing, again, to my point about team is you're not doing that in a silo. You've got great people to sort of help you prioritize and collaborate to be working on the most important things for the company. But I think that, as I look back on the maturation of the business, a key to our success and our scale has been an emphasis on prioritization. And it's, again, from the corporate world, I think prioritization is of course still used, but it's much, much different in a startup environment.
Healthy boundaries is something that I really believe in, and being able to set specific boundaries, to have various expectations, in ways that you can set proper communication within your team. How have you been able to set proper and healthy boundaries as you have scaled and grown as a company and also as an individual?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would also layer in this unforeseen pandemic that, you know, hit us a few years ago. And healthy boundaries, I think one of the, I talked about a core skill being prioritization, but I think one of the absolute essential ingredients to a startup succeeding is around good communication and trust. And as a company grows, like inherently, I think most companies will find themselves in information silos and communication silos. And so that's been, it might feel like a subtle point, but a really big area that we focus on is how do we sort of ensure that the communication can kind of scale with the headcount and the growth of the business? Because information silos and communication silos are, I think at its core level, they're inefficient, but they can be incredibly problematic to trust, collaboration. So the boundaries for us, we think about how do we provide a very fluid information environment where communication is shared freely, context is shared among different teams. And that ultimately starts at the founding level, the management level, and setting that expectation and ensuring that there is good communication and collaboration across a variety of different business units. How should our data security team be thinking about initiatives that our customer success team is working on? And how is that context shared in a really healthy way so that we have great communication and trust?
As an individual, of course, the long list of things that you said that you need to get done on a daily basis, you know, it can weigh on an individual. So my question to you is, how do you continually make sure that you're taking care of yourself so then you can be more empowered and have more energy for the people that you have to serve?
Yeah, and especially with this change to, or even core question of how, what does it mean to work now? Like, how do you work in a really effective way? Keeping yourself healthy and prioritizing your own personal and family goals and needs can get difficult when there's not sort of clear lines between an office and where do I work, and is this hybrid or remote? It can get challenging working from home. And so I know I would tie that back to a core value of Omni's, which is we have this notion of an air mask concept. And so the idea is it's incredibly challenging, if not impossible, to take care of others, to take care of the company, to perform very well for our business if you're not taking care of yourself. And it goes back to this sort of airplane air mask concept. Put on your air mask before you put on anyone else's. And we take a lot of pride in that value and put a lot of resources. We put a lot of emphasis behind it. We want folks to be incredibly healthy from a personal, professional, mental, emotional standpoint when they show up to work. That's our focus, is on the individual, for them to be healthy, with the idea being that if they're healthy, then they can be healthy and provide for their family. They can provide for their team at Omni. They can provide for the shareholders of Omni. So we do at Omni, we place a lot of value on this notion of being healthy and putting on your air mask. And it's, I think, been a key part to our culture and how folks are thinking about, showing up at work every day. If they have the permission from the company to invest in themselves. And, we have like a multitude of that priority list that I talked about, isn't necessarily just your work priorities, right? You've got other priorities. And so we try to encourage, if filling up your air mask is spending time with your family, we encourage that. If that is purchasing a gym membership at a Muay Thai club, because getting in the gym, 4 or 5 days a week and hitting a heavy bag is important to you, we really encourage that. Pursuing some other hobby or interest is something that helps fill your tank and make you healthy. We invest and support those types of things. So I think for us, we do, as a company, we look at the individual and want to make sure that individual is healthy and has resources to be healthy.
That's good. I know you've got to care about yourself so that you can care about others and also be intentional about doing that. And it sounds like you've got a pretty good understanding of that and have implemented systems within the company to achieve that milestone. This is exciting. Like I said once before, I mean, you're growing as a company, you're growing as an individual. And my question to you is, in order for the company to reach a specific level that you've desired or that you've put out in a vision, how have you been able to grow yourself, though, as the business has grown? Because like I said, you have stressors in your life. So now this is more of a personal question. So it's more of, how are you growing yourself so then you can be the best leader for the company?
Yeah, I really attempt to walk the walk on prioritization too. So just even between Tony and I and how we think about our value creation and contribution to the business, we're really constantly looking at it from the lens of what is the most important thing that we could be doing right now? How do we sort of contribute the highest value tasks, things to the business right now? And so we're even running through our own sort of, you know, personal and professional priority list on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And that I think has been key to sort of give, again, folks across the company to reinforce that prioritization notion, but just been helpful in navigating all of the challenges that are thrown at you as a founder. And it doesn't just stop at sort of the company, you know, the company doors when when you're done working for the day. Like there's sort of lots of life and other things that are challenging for anyone to sort of go through. And to do that as a founder, I think, one, it helps to have a co-founder. That's been an incredible, I think, part of our secret formulas, Tony's and my dynamic in our relationship. But we're constantly running through that personal, professional, company prioritization list on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so understanding that communication level between your co-founder or people that you're in relationship with is important. And then just relaying that to the people that are a part of your organization, it sounds like you have a high priority to do so. Share with us a little bit about the future visions you have for the company as, you know, you continue to scale. I'm not sure your exact funding schedule and how or when you've received an influx of capital that would allow you to unlock that vision, but share with us a little bit of the vision you have and then those that are on board to help you achieve that vision.
So we are very much Omni views itself as a key catalyst towards the evolution of private capital markets. And if you study the macro trends, even over the last 5 years, but certainly the last decade, the amount of capital that has been allocated that comes into the private markets is incredible. And the growth of that capital coming into private markets has been really astonishing over the last 5 years. So we very much subscribe to the belief that private capital markets are going to continue exponentially growing and evolving and maturing from here forward. And we believe that ultimately sort of the mass pools of wealth and capital that exist to fuel innovation and growth, the interest and demand for that capital to come into private markets and innovation and the innovation economy is going to continue. There's really no ceiling to how much demand could continue coming into private markets. It's really exciting. And so when you think about when we think about Omni's role in those evolving markets and the need for a highly efficient, highly reliable, and trustworthy source of data, our platform becomes a necessary component to those future markets. So I think we take a lot of pride in bringing data maturity and data strategy to these really immature private markets. And I think get really excited that if we're right, that these markets are going to continue exponentially growing and thriving into the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, then Omni's role in that future becomes incredibly valuable.
On a personal side, what is the future and legacy that you're wanting to leave other than from a professional business side of it?
The entrepreneurship can, depending on what your personal goals, what your business goals are. It doesn't have to necessarily look like, you know, the high growth tech venture funded model. You know, lots of entrepreneurs that have bootstrapped and have built great businesses without really any or very little outside investor capital. But for us, like Tony and I left law, did not have a lot of resources, not independently wealthy. We did have to sort of bootstrap and take on capital to continue fueling the growth of the business. So I think that on a personal level, what I get very excited about is returning lots of capital, making a lot of money for the investors that backed Tony and I very early and that continue to back us. That I take great pride in that I would view that as an incredible personal achievement if we can return a lot of capital and make Omni an incredible investment for some of our investors, for most, you know, all of our investors. And if you look at even just the a seed venture capitalist, when they invest early on in a business, they take a lot of risk. And if the company hits and is very good, then that investment can actually return the fund. So if a $25 million fund, how they typically model their, you know, their returns and their portfolios, they're banking on a few companies will be big, you know, big returns. And so where we play and how I think about that from Omni's perspective is the ability to return a fund for our seed investors, to have Omni be such a tremendous success that we have returned an entire fund for our seed investors. Like that alone is just an incredible achievement. So I think personally, I take a lot of pride and hope that we can realize a future where we make Omni an incredible decision and investment for all of our investors.
So in essence, making the people that have trusted in you happy and trusted in the business that you've spent a lot of time in to, you know, return that. It sounds like, you know, exactly what you're saying, you know, and it can be a difficult road, but it sounds like you're up for the task and you're willing to take the steps forward to make sure that those investors are happy through kind of that legacy filled. Why? I know you have a family, so that's one of the whys that propel you forward. And, you know, your business is almost like your family too. So if there's anything that you want to say to your team right now and also your family, what would that be?
Yeah, I mean, first to my family, wife and kids, thank you for allowing me to go on this journey. It comes with incredible sacrifice of, you know, time and focus on a business like this. So I do thank my wife in particular for, you know, again, going back to leaving this really stable career at a big law firm that was going to be a great, you know, career path with great financial rewards along that journey. So thanks to Cammie for letting me take the risk and the plunge. And I think if this pans out well, it'll turn out to be a good financial decision in any case, but thanks to her for allowing me to take that risk. And to the team, similar to our investors, employees joining a startup are taking a risk. They're making an investment in a business. There's opportunity costs. They can probably earn more money at a larger company or some other business. But they're choosing, you know, our employees choose Omni because we're after something pretty unique and interesting. And they really believe in what is possible and what we can achieve here. So I thank our employees for thinking like investors and making that solid investment decision to come join Omni. And I would take great pride, just like our investors, if we reach a point where lots of our employees have a phenomenal and wonderful outcome at the end of this journey.
Well, and strong leadership is something that it seems that you really focus on as well. And just creating that, you know, no excuse attitude, but you're just also have an authentic connection, it seems, you know, based on your feeling through this interview too. So thank you for that and sharing a little bit deeper in the life of yourself, as well as the life of building Omni there in Salt Lake, as well as all over the world. So we're excited. How can we get a hold of you? And do you know if there's anything that your company needs at this moment that people at the Founders Odyssey Group can help?
Yes, I think easy to find us. We're at AUMNI.FUND, omni.fund. And you can find me on, you know, LinkedIn. Got folks sort of all over, easy to find us. And I mean, how you can help us, Nathan, I mean, you've given me a nice platform to tell more about really the Omni story, my personal story. And I hope it, you know, it reaches folks and can be useful and helpful in their, you know, in their day to day and some of the problems and challenges that they're encountering.
Well, thank you, Kelsey, for your time today. And if you guys like today's episode, feel free to like, and also share this with friends. We're on YouTube as well as Spotify. And until next time, feel free to go through. We've got some amazing guests that have been on that raised, you know, millions in funding to taking their company IPO to just some amazing founders. So once again, my name is Nathan Bird, and this has been the Founders Odyssey Podcast.